C2PR. Number 6A.
So we have discussed how we would proceed if we have a text and would like to find out the structure of that text. Now, the point naturally now is that you have a textbook which has already been treated that way, that we already have the layout of each chapter, and I must apologize that I take away the joy from you to find it out yourself, because that's really a kick. You really get a kick out of it, to have that wonderful text and say, now what does that text really say? What is the line of reasoning that goes through? So, as this has already been done, the next best step that every student can take is to see if he would arrive at more or less the same conclusions. You see, I say more or less because when we come to the point of epitomizing the subject, then naturally there is quite a range of liberty that you can take. If you want to make that caption very short or a bit longer, that naturally is left to everyone, as long as it is in the same tonality. So it isn't so that if we take these epitomes that you must feel, well, you would find out exactly every word as it is here. These epitomes are more or less only indications to the tonality of it. So don't be disturbed when you go through them with the textbook that you feel, well, here or there, I would have perhaps laid the accent on another term or so. As long as, I say, the tonality is preserved. The main thing, naturally, is that we train ourselves in reading a text structurally. No matter if the text is already laid out or not, the main thing is that we polish, so to say, our consciousness in the categories. Because, you know, there is not only the Bible that has to be read, and not only the textbook that has to be read structurally, but also life itself, world history itself. This is also an expression of what's going on. What's going on in the world is not just something at random, which is absolutely independent on the governing principle. There is still one world and one principle at work, and that one principle at work shows itself forth not only as the Bible text, not only as the text of the textbook, but also as world happenings, world history. Therefore, we have to be able to read that too. And whatever we read, we have to read with that frame of reference which we have as the capitalized terms. So, in order to cultivate that consciousness, you can take the textbook, like prayer, what we'll do this week, and take our epitomes, and then as a first step, try to see if these epitomes are actually in the text, if they really represent the subject of the text, or if you will find out, well, that something that Max has put together, that's his own way of doing things. I couldn't find the right term, I wanted to say it differently. But you know what I wanted to say, that I made it up. This is always the difficulty when you have a text interpretation, that you can be quite sure that the next one will come and says, well, you made that up. You made it fit. And perhaps that was true in many cases in the history of the Dolly school, that people were making up things which were not there just to please their sense of order. And so it is absolute imperative that each student would be cultured so far that they can take these epitomes with a very critical, not with a criticizing, but with a critical attitude and say, well, we are engaged in a science. This has nothing to do with people. This has nothing to do with nice people, with beautiful people, with truly nice people. It has to do with ideas and with the science of ideas. And that is to be investigated. So that is the first step, how you can use these epitomes to culture yourself and say, now, if I read the text in the textbook, how would I word those epitomes? And then perhaps see how I have done it. And then perhaps you see that you have something very different. And then you can ask yourself, why on earth has Max that? And you can go back again to the text and see, how did Max arrive now at this way of presenting it? And perhaps that will help lighting up your consciousness and say, oh yes, now I see that perhaps what is in the epitome is more fundamental than what I would have found out of the text. That's the way I cultured my sense of the tonality. I went very carefully through John Dolly's verbatim reports. You know, there are about 5,000 pages. And very carefully, over and over. And I didn't just read what he said. I just didn't just say, well, that's his epitome. And as John Dolly was a giant, it must be right. But that I said to myself, how would I have epitomized it? And then would look for how John Dolly would do it, and then in most cases he did it differently than what I may have found. And so I went back to the text, just wondering, well, I mean, John Dolly was quite a guy, so quite a caliber, so he may have seen something more than what I have seen on the first go. And so I'd see how I could polish my consciousness. I did that over years and years, many, many years. And only, I always feel that only because of that work was I able afterwards to decode the textbook. Because the Bible naturally was a wonderful training ground for reading a text in its tones, because the Bible has no capitalized terms. You had to hear, so to say, the capitalized terms without that they appeared. If you take any book of the Bible, be it the prophet or one of the historical book or so, not the terms mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love and word, Christ, Christianity and science and levels doesn't appear once. But the tone is there, the subject is there. They didn't have at that time this wonderful abstract language that we have today, in order to bring out exactly what they want to bring out. So for every synonymous term, every writer had to use all kinds of stories and symbolisms and telling long stories just to bring out perhaps the birth of spirit and things like that. So through the Bible, one can really culture the tonality. But it's work, and it's lovely work. So here again, now that the textbook is decoded, you can say to yourself, well, I can do that in an even easier way with the textbook. I just go to the text and compare it with these epitomes. This is the first point, so that you would control or compare your findings with mine. And if you feel yours is better, don't hesitate to stick to yours. That's what the scientist does. He must be convinced about things. But there are naturally a few criteria that you have, that you can use in order to find out if the findings you get are correct. There are actually objective scientific criteria which are absolutely free from the subjective sense we put into the text and into interpretation of the text. That can be a guideline to our findings. What are such criteria? We will take, as we go on, one by one. But the first big criteria that we have to use is this, that we must see that there is a constant factor in the epitomes. Say, if we go through the chapter on prayer and we try ourselves to find out those subjects, and perhaps we find out first that there are 9, or perhaps 5, and then you try to symbolize them with a synonymous term, and you arrive, say, at the point where you say, yes, the very first subject of prayer is typically love, and the second one is typically spirit, and the third one is typically principle, and the fourth one is typically mind. And then when you have that finding, you say, does that make sense? Is this an order, or is it not an order? Is the order, as I have just said it, what did I say? Love, spirit, principle, mind. Is that an order that makes sense? And you say to yourself, no, that isn't an order that makes any sense. So you have a criteria that tells right away your interpretation may not be right. So you have to go over the whole thing again and begin to listen closer. And don't think that you can do that just by reading the text through once or twice. It is a beautiful, prayerful, listening attitude where one sits just comfortably back and has the textbook in front of oneself, reads it quietly, tries not to read with the eyes, tries to hear with the spiritual ear, hear what is the message? What is the fundamental message at the bottom of the text? And go over that again, and again, and again, and again. You see? The scientist does not show himself forth that he gets an answer right away always. We just can see how the physicists work and how the chemists work and the botanists work. It's a long work. They try again, they try again. Their laboratories are there to make a new experiment and then another method is used, another method is tried out, and little, by mistakes and by true findings, by both, somehow the true story comes out. It's actually only the religionist in us that always wants to have everything quite clear right away. He knows that truth is absolute, therefore all what he has to find must be right absolute, right away. The scientist works very differently. He has that infinite patience with the love of the subject. And he does not try to fool himself by making things fit the way he likes them to be fitted. He always has that attitude, I don't mind what's coming out of my research. I leave it absolutely open. I have no preconceived conception what should come out. I have no preconceived conception that there must be seven subjects, because in most chapters there are not seven subjects. There may be 2 times 7 subjects. There may be 3 times 7 subjects. There may be 4 subjects of World Christ Christianity, and so on. So we always approach the subject with a completely unpreconceived mentality. That's prayer. You don't say what must come out. You are so humble that you always stand inwardly in awe and in wonderment. I wonder what the text will show me. I wonder what the message will be. I wonder what the beauty of what I am going to find will be. Can you hear prayer of a scientist? That's not the prayer of a religionist. So, I said one criteria would be to see if our findings are consistent in some way or the other. Say consistent in the 7 or consistent in the 4 or in any way and shape and form that is possible. So you can test yourself. A religionist cannot test himself. Only a scientist can do that. If we find then perhaps that actually the subject might run from mind to spirit to soul, principle, life, truth and love, and you say very happily, golly, I have found it, wonderful. The subject is laid out in the word order, starting with a proposition in mind, unfolding that proposition through spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and coming to a conclusion and climax in love. You say, that's wonderful. But still, you have to test that finding more. Namely, you have to see if the epitomes that you make are also within themselves consistent. We can easily say, well, this is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love. But what we mean by it may not be consistent. You don't know what I said. All right. I tell you what I said. Is it true?
Yeah.
I know. It's not your blame. It's not your blame. This is work. It's new. But it's a beautiful thing. For instance, if you didn't have the textbook and I would write out on a blank sheet the text of the chapter on, from the chapter on prayer, the first subject, mind, you could define it, oh, this is mind. And if I would follow it and write out the whole text from Atonement and Eucharist from the tone of spirit, you would also say, oh, that's fine, that's spirit. And if the text would go further on, actually I wouldn't tell you, the text would go on, I would take and write out from the third chapter, marriage, the third subject, soul. You could easily detect it as soul. And from the next chapter, principle, and then from the next chapter, life, and from the next chapter, truth, and from the seventh chapter, love, you would have a continual text. Can you see what I said? And if you would try to see the structure of it, you would say, oh, that's rather easy, because it's easy to see that the first thing is really mind, and then the text goes on to spirit, then the text goes on to soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Would that make an order? Is that an order? If it's mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love? Not at all. Huh? Not at all. Huh? Why? Because each tone would have another aspect in it. Namely, the first tone would have the aspect in it from the approach to God, the Word as the Word. The second one, Spirit, from Atonement and Eucharist, would have the understructured tone of Word as the Christ. And the third would have the Word as Christianity, and the fourth as Word as Science, and so on. They would not be consonant. Can you say consonant when it is, and the tone is stimmig? Consistent, huh? Would not be really consistent. Because with everyone you would change your key. The key from the Word as Word, change to the key from the Word as Christ, and then from Word as Christianity. So in though you would have a text where you said, oh, that's wonderful, I'm quite a guy now, I can detect here is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, and you wouldn't. Because the key is not the same, is not consistent, and therefore does not make sense. Could that example be good? Now, if we go just to one chapter, like prayer, and we try out, because we don't know any better, try out what it is in it, and we would also have seven subjects, where we also would say, oh, that's fine, that's actually mind and spirit and soul, principle, life, truth, and love. We still don't know if our findings in the epitomes are right. Because we may word or define those subjects, the epitomes, not really consonant. This is that stimmig. Have you somebody who knows German?
You're right.
Consonant. Yeah. See, that it has the same tonality in it. Huh? Namely, always the Word as the Word. Our epitomes can be checked or tested by saying, do all these epitomes have actually the attitude of Word as Word? The moment they don't have, we know we haven't really made the epitomes correctly.
Put the word compatible in there, I think, would describe it.
Compatible, yeah. All right. So, can you see that the epitomizing is an art? Is an art that we only can culture first through our tonality. But it is an art that is not subjective. It's divinely objective. Just as any exact science has only objective truth. Mathematics have only objective truths. Those truths don't change if I look at it, or you look at it, or the other person looks at it. And so it is with this reality of being. That's an divinely objective reality. And independent, and should be independent, on our subjective view of that text. Or else it isn't a science, if everyone can find out something different. If it could come together, 100 people, and everyone has a different layout and a different interpretation of the very same text, then we jolly well know that this is not true. Truth is truth, no matter how we look at it. Therefore, the art of epitomizing is an art which demands very much that we lay aside our subjective, our humanly subjective view, and actually let only the divine reality as a divine object really define itself to us. Then we should be able to arrive at the same conclusions. If we don't arrive at the same conclusions, something must be wrong. See? Because if we go out from the hypothesis or the axiom, whatever we like, that the textbook is God's message to man as its science, principle interpreting itself through science, then this is very objective. That's what God does. So our finding out what that interpretation of God is in the text must be absolutely objective and not subjective. And there we come to a terrific issue, because we must not forget that science is very young. Christian science is very young in the world's mentality. The world's mentality is religious. We all are brought up on religion and not on the science of being. And religion always said everyone can have its own subjective, individual approach and findings and inspiration. And so this is very new. Therefore, we must not be astonished that there is opposition to this method. And therefore, we must see that each one is clear within his own mind that he uses a scientific method of text interpretation and not an individual subjective text interpretation.